Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel and Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Hello. Cole Hornaday.
Hey.
Well, hey. And Chris Casso.
Hello.
Hello. How is everybody?
Doing
welcome
okay.
back, y'all.
Wow. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a whole week.
As the space-time continuum has taught us. Okay, so, yeah, let's jump right in. Hey, y'all, what's coming up at Comics Dungeon?
So the most interesting thing we've got right now is that if you're familiar with smile.amazon.com, we are now on that, or specifically Comics for Community, Compassion, and Culture, our nonprofit. So if you're not familiar with Smile, what it is that you log in through that portal at Amazon. It operates just like normal Amazon account. And you choose a charity out of many, many great charities. And every time you make a purchase, Amazon matches 0.5% of your purchase, which actually adds up very, very quickly. So if you're going to be spending a lot of money over the holiday season here online, please think about us and just do a search for Comics for Community, Compassion, and Culture.
Even quicker, you can just do C4C3 and it gets you there.
It gets you there? Okay.
Cool. I searched it.
Ah,
yep.
Good.
Excellent. I did my research.
Good. And yes, so that's that.
Neat. Alrighty. And yeah, it's at this buying time of season when I'm sure a majority of us and all of you out there will be doing probably half of our Christmas shopping online, maybe half of that via Amazon.com. So it's a worthy cause. I actually have a couple of nonprofit organizations that I smile to. I think that's
the
proper verbiage.
Is that the brand
thing you do?
I'm gonna smile to you.
Something like
that's
that.
That's just so
I smiled
sweet.
For you.
Yeah, okay. That's great. Well,
all right.
I can't be crabby about the cause factor, so.
And one of the reasons why you should.
Yeah, I know. It's
one of the reasons why you should is because Comics Dungeon here has a nonprofit that's an umbrella organization for them. And it's a good thing because this industry is kind of limping along. We lost some brethren here in Seattle recently. Xanadu Comics downtown had to sadly close.
Yeah, they've. I think they've been in business since 1975. And
over 30 years.
Yeah, they're this. Yeah. I thought it was like maybe 42 or something.
Oh my goodness!
But they are the. They were the second, or they.
That's
they
almost
are right
as
now.
Old as you, Ben.
Almost
the second oldest comic book store in the state.
So, were they always at the same location on 3rd Avenue in downtown Seattle?
They moved a couple times.
Okay.
They used to share space with another used bookstore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
They also had a couple different comic book store locations.
Yeah, they had the location in the U District. And, and was there another one further north?
I can't remember where that one was.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it was further north, but I don't remember what city it's in.
Yeah, I always used to shop at the university one.
Sure. I worked in Pioneer Square shortly after relocating to Seattle. I'd get off the bus a couple stops early and pop in there and pick up comics on the way down to my office in Pioneer Square.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. I was actually just walking downtown, down 3rd Avenue recently, and looked over to Xanadu, and I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, they're still... And then, like, the next day, I saw the announcement on Facebook.
So they're closing, like, what, January 13th?
That was 28th.
Okay, yeah. So we have some time to visit the store, and if you have good memories, to go and take a look around and support them in their final run.
Their last hurrah. And go help them. I'm shilling for another comic book store, but go help them clean out their inventory.
Sure. They have a Black Friday sale going on. That's going to be a pretty big one. Perry, he calls himself the president and janitor. he will be maintaining Xanadu as a company, but as like an online company.
Mm-hmm.
So the storefront's just what's closing.
Sure.
Because they have so many, many, many back issues hiding in like their basement area or whatever. So, yeah.
Because they have always had a back issue selection that kind of rivaled Comics Dungeon, because you guys are the two main stores, go-to places for back issues, because other stores don't really offer up that real estate for holding on to back issues the way you guys have.
Yarg.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, go visit Xanadu if you are in the Seattle area. Moving on to a bit more brighter news, a friend of the show and Eisner Award-winning cartoonist David Lasky has been picked by the city of Seattle to create a comic based on the Georgetown steam plant, along with, help me on the pronunciation, everybody, Mayreid? Mm-hmm. Mayreid case?
Mayreid.
Mayreid?
I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
David's
going to be
mentioned the name often, and you know how names are so good at sticking in my brain.
Out of 70 plus applicants,
amazing.
A panel chose those two. David will be cartooning it.
Yes.
And Ms. Case will be writing it.
Well, if you've ever read any of David, you know, David has a real penchant for celebrating the history of things. And case in point is the Carter Family book, which I will never stop praising. But also, he does a lot of short pieces. And one of my favorite short pieces he did was in that anthology from the 90s that I reviewed eons back. It was in a collection called The Last Dangerous Christmas, where he does his own analysis of Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. And it's his take on the history of making the movie and why it was not a success when it first happened, and then how it evolved into a success. And little theater side note, every year 1448 Projects Theater Anonymous does this very unique production of It's a Wonderful Life, where no one knows who plays what parts. Everybody shows up, the auditorium fills up, and then the first actor takes the stage. They have never rehearsed with anyone else in the production. So I gave a copy of this book because one of the contributors, David Ingersoll, was kind enough to hand me about a dozen or more copies. I gave a copy of it to Sean Bellier, who's the producer of 1448. He read it. He met up with me. I ran into him at a wedding. He said, Cole, I want to produce this for the stage. I want to produce Lasky's piece for the stage. It is so cool because David has this unique take on history, and his voice is unique. And I'm like, that's cool. By the by, we're going to be plugging the Panel Jumper Live here in a little bit. But if you are one of the first 10 to 12 people in the door, you're going to get a free copy of The Last Dangerous Christmas. That's the total amount I have to give away. But if you get there first and you get your tickets, you will get a freebie. So just saying, get your tickets now. Ooh. Show up early. Show up often.
You heard it here first, yep. People.
I had a weird moment when they first announced this. They were looking for the artist, and it was posted on a few different like news sites I saw. And I had kind of like what the Watchmen comics, Dr. Manhattan, experiences like time at the same time throughout space. I had a moment where I'm like, yeah, it's David Lasky, right? It's going to be David Lasky. Right, I know it's David Lasky.
Yeah. Is that already happened, or is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Is that happening now?
It's just like, it's...
Oh, whoa. You mean like an Arrival? Oh, I just ruined the movie. Right. Sorry, gang.
And then they announced it just recently, and now it's just like, but we already knew that. Oh, no? I guess, okay.
So yeah, the George...
You're too linked into the Matrix. Yeah. That's your problem.
Yeah.
The Georgetown Steam Plant was built in 1906. It's now a National Historic Landmark, and they are converting it to a cultural space. A lot of like independent films have been filmed there. And
a lot of steampunk parties. Yay, steampunk! Yeah.
And actually, the panel that chose David and Ms. Case included a friend of the show and Fantagraphics bookstore manager Larry Reed, who had on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So so congratulations to David and Mayreid.
I hope we're getting that right.
Hasn't stopped us before.
Send your angry emails to perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com.
Because Ben will read them and forward them to me.
Blame them on me. Mostly. Because let's face it.
All right. So we got a lot of industry news this week. Brian Michael Bendis announced that he's leaving Marvel for DC. Is this a earth-shattering revelation for Mr. Bendis, moving from one ship to another?
You know, it actually is. I've heard it being mentioned in a whole bunch of sources outside of normal comic book things. So it's a big move for somebody who's only been ever associated with one company. And with all the different news happening with Marvel and DC right now and how the market is and how it's not great for Marvel, it's kind of like, ooh, what does that mean?
You know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was followed up by more big news as well. So it's like, do these mean something together?
Mm. Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
Well, let's not forget how successful Bendis was as an independent creator for a long time.
Mm-hmm. He was considered an architect of Marvel. And if you look at that list, of people, like, I think 3/4 of them are gone.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
like, Jason Aaron is running the ship right now with a lot of storylines, but that's like the only guy they
It's a high burnout industry. I mean, all persnicketiness about how you feel about certain creators aside, you know, that's, it must take a lot of creative energy to keep producing and to be under that kind of gun. And someone like Bendis, he creates very epic stories and they have nuance, and he's not, I mean, Chris, please feel free to differ with me, but I don't always see his stories as being typically formulaic. I mean, he doesn't have a garbage in, garbage out process that you saw in the earlier days of comics. But what I'm saying, Chris is thinking.
That seems
he's
different
thinking,
to the conversations yes. we've been having.
All right.
So So that's an interesting thing. I would say that his plotting is not necessarily formulaic.
Okay.
His scripting is.
I would agree with you on that.
Right.
But I see that's why I think he's successful.
Yeah.
Is that he has a unique. Is that you don't like his approach to dialogue? I do, because I find it to be very theatrical.
And I agree in certain cases. It just doesn't need to be applied to everything. It's like, I like peanut butter, but I don't like it on everything.
I can respect that. I can totally respect that.
Actually, I do kind of like it on everything.
You probably picked the wrong thing. Like,
yeah,
mustard probably. And peanut butter, you probably shouldn't have picked, you know.
Marshmallow sauce? Marshmallow sauce.
There's a good face there.
The article doesn't say when this is going to take place.
Right.
And so I heard talk in the store earlier today about like what he's going to do to wrap up the titles he's currently writing on, mm-hmm. if at all.
Right. Yeah. There will be a wrap up. And I thought I read somewhere that like some of the editors gave him like the green light that he can use like every character or every character he's ever done at some point. So I think he'll have like a blowout issue somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It just makes sense. You know, I don't think there's any bad feelings or anything so far.
Yeah.
No bad blood.
Yeah.
It might be a good thing for him though, because of some of the formulaicness or some of the, I think, pitfalls he has in some of the stuff he writes. It might be good for him to shake it up. It just depends on what he's going to get.
Yeah.
At DC.
Yeah.
It just really depends on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no discussing that and no speculation as far as I've seen yet about what he's going to take over when he gets to DC or if he's just going to start afresh.
Mm-hmm. Lots of fan speculation.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Well, we're not about speculation here. We're about hard news.
Hard facts.
This is a
the hardest of news.
Speaking of hard news,
just the facts.
And which might also be connected to Mr. Bendis leaving Marvel, is they have named a new editor-in-chief.
Mm-hmm.
C.B. Cebulski is going to be taking over Marvel as their EIC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sounds like a big shakeup's happening over at Marvel.
Yeah, which I think it's needed.
Yeah.
Well, they also had to fire a lot of people recently too.
We will get to that.
Yeah. And you got to tighten the ranks when you wind up having to fire that many people in succession.
Mm-hmm. But hopefully what this will mean too is that there's just a bit of a mix-up or a mixing of different creative teams that's kind of sorely needed, because this entire relaunch barely had any changes.
Yeah,
which is
really
kind of like that's, if you're going to make such a big deal about it, you should actually make something different.
It's too muddy.
Yeah, it's a little muddy.
Of, like, what it is. And there's just a lot of stuff that's just continuing on.
Yeah. Are you talking about the legacy thing?
Yeah. There's like, only, like, a couple books that changed creators.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
I don't want to get into the legacy. We don't have time.
C.B. Cebulski's been with Marvel full-time. He joined full-time in 2002 as an associate editor. He's vice president of international brand management for the company, which was interesting because the New York Times talked to him from his apartment in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. But he's credited as his biggest success was at Marvel was publishing Brian K. Vaughan's The Runaways.
Mm-hmm.
And so, he's now stepping into the leadership role So I did see a lot of fan speculation online about this, and a lot of people were like, well, hopefully this is what turns Marvel around.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it would definitely need somebody who is willing to look at like a broader scope,
yeah,
as opposed to kind of going through the corporate, like, put out number ones, more events, more this, and like not really taking feedback either, because there seemed to be a lot of shutdown around feedback.
That doesn't necessarily mean that's within his power.
It's true, but Alonso was saying a lot of stuff and yeah, was a part of a lot of that feedback. So mm-hmm,
yeah,
we'll just see how that goes.
The Agent Smiths were just standing right behind him.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, it's all happening.
The suits.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes. Mr. Cebulski.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Spider-Man. Okay.
Wow. That really went over well.
Yeah.
You did
yeah,
a great job on
I
that.
I don't know why it tickled me.
Eight legs.
Yeah.
Hey.
Ben Lawrence, ladies and gentlemen.
So, the comic book industry is not immune to the culture today, and DC has announced that it first had suspended and has now fired editor Eddie Braganza for misallegations of sexual harassment. And this is probably just it sounds like it might be the tip of the iceberg, because mm-hmm, we're at the leading crest of a wave that mm-hmm is happening.
Yeah.
Yep.
He had a he'd already had allegations.
I didn't know that.
Two or 3 years ago, pinpoint, and people were whistleblowing him and
yeah,
stuff like that.
We were talking about it earlier because yeah, my thing with this was, I was like, wait, this happened. I thought we already did this run.
It did happen,
but he just kind of got under rug.
Now yeah, that I remember that, I think we actually did talk about that a long time ago.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, so now, maybe because of the flurry of everyone right, having misconduct and different things happening, maybe they're finally like, we actually have to do something now.
We can't,
you know.
Yeah. Well, one thing you can do is what Gal Gadot is doing.
Mm-hmm.
She has put her foot down, and she says she will not return as Wonder Woman if Brett Ratner's production company is part of it.
Excellent.
And she's totally taking a stand, but she's like, I cannot be the voice of this strong women generation if Brett Ratner, who has been accused of terrible behavior in the past, if he makes money off of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great because there was supposed to be some sort of event where she was going to actually hand Brett Ratner an award, and she dropped out of that. So yeah, I think Warner Brothers has already said they're going to cut ties. They have announced they are severing ties with Ratner. So, yeah, that's one way to do it, is hit him where it hurts the most, and that's their wallet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And
I thought it was their pocketbook.
Oh, you live in such a different time.
I do.
And
I
so
do.
Far, I think
I'm antiquated.
Is Wonder Woman the one that's made them the most money?
I would believe.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's good. It's yeah, kind of a yeah, double dose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
and
mm-hmm,
yeah, and that's the thing that's kind of frustrating is that now there is this opportunity, because that film was so successful, that Gal Gadot can have that kind of leverage.
But
that
we had to wait for
but
that.
But we had
leverage
to wait for it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
Okay, but things are happening, and good things are happening. So
yep.
Speaking of good things happening,
yeah,
Bill Finger's getting his own road in New York City.
That's yeah, so cool.
It's going to be.
He regularly had one in the Batman animated series. There was always a Finger Lane or a Finger Street or Finger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but that wasn't real. That was animated.
Well, it's going
to
be.
It's good to distinguish
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Sometimes
is,
you need
sure,
to do that.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
Street designating Bill Finger Way will be unveiled in the Bronx at East 192nd Street and the Grand cool, Concourse on the northeast corner adjacent to Poe Park. Why there? Because
did
it was
say Jason Momoa Park?
Adjacent to Poe Park. Although, I will not be surprised if in 30 years there is a Jason Momoa Park in
why,
New York City.
Why would we want to do that to the general
with
public?
With a nice goldfish pond?
Yeah.
The goldfish pond.
So,
nice.
It was actually on, apparently, I didn't know
that
this.
That tickled me. There you go.
It was
well
on
done.
It was on a park bench in Poe Park, named after Edgar Allan Poe, where Bob Kane and Bill Finger first conceptualized Batman. So that's why it's over there. I don't know from New York, so I don't know where this is, but good on, good on
people who did
people,
that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not unusual for New York to honor famous residents that way, but this article from 13thdimension.com claims it's probably the first time it's happened with a comic book creator.
And I want to plug it again, but if y'all have Hulu, I highly recommend the documentary Batman and Bill, which tells the story of Bill Finger, Bill Finger's contribution to the whole Bob Kane Batman production company, and how his contributions were, swept under the rug, and then his granddaughter's efforts to get Finger's credit on Batman materials going forward, from films to comics to whatnot. It's a really insightful documentary, and it tells you a lot about what it was like to be a creator back then and to be so utterly and totally dismissed as an artist.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I haven't seen that, but I'll check that out. It's going to be unveiled on December 8th, and I wouldn't be surprised if the estate of Bob Kane comes by and restripes the road. Let's go to Book Report, everybody.
Woo!
And let's start with Chris.
Let's see. I will talk about after I drop book.
No.
There, got it. Okay. Queen Street by Emmanuel Chateauneuf.
Chateauneuf.
Yes.
Oh, it's French. Oh, of course.
I think she's Canadian.
Oh.
French Canadian.
Yes.
Oh.
So it's a little graphic novel, and she writes and draws it, and it is basically a slice of life story following a mother named Amy, who's moved to Canada from the Philippines, and she married a Canadian man, and he's always on the road, so she's kind of raising their daughter Melody on her own. And it's very sweet, it's great characters, and she's got a very nice art style. It's kind of like a mix of manga and a few other influences. I'm trying to figure out exactly what I told Nicole when I first mentioned it. So I really liked it,
mm-hmm.
but it just kind of is. It doesn't do anything. There's no real plot, and it just kind of stops. And I just realized when I went back and read it, like in the beginning, there's like a flashback to when the mother was in the Philippines, and there's like a little narration that says, "Now that I think about it, dot, 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 dot." And I never noticed that narration again in the entirety of the book, and I forgot all about it. And then in the last couple pages, it comes in again, and no, I take it back. It isn't that I don't remember much. And it's like the narration kind of forgot what it was saying to me. And it still didn't really finish saying a thing. So I think she's learning. I think this is her debut, I believe. And her storytelling's great, but I think she's got some pacing issues to work through. But even then, it's still pretty fantastic and very engaging. So yeah, if you just kind of want a nice slice of life story about a mother and her daughter, the daughter's very precocious. She has a very active imagination where she thinks she's Sailor Moon or Tarzan, and reality changes around her. I think this creator is going to be going places. So does Ramon K. Perez, who I really love. He has a blurb on the back. He's the guy who did Tale of Sand.
Love Tale of Sand.
Yep. I do recommend this. It's $13.99. And I'm looking forward to her doing more and kind of sharpening her skills a bit.
Cool.
So, yeah.
All right. Queen Street. Thank you very much, Chris. And Nicole, let's move on to you. What do you want to tell us about?
So I jumped on to Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. It's a Marvel title, and this story arc is the Fantastic Three Part 1. The number is 25, so there's been, what is that, like 4 or 5 trades before that or something?
Was the Kirby series. So we're doing the legacy thing, right? So we're going back to the original.
These haven't legacied.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that's a verb now.
I'm making it.
Yeah, well, just like rebirthed and
although
stuff like that.
Although I'm changing that to reborthed.
That's right, reborthed.
Yeah, now you're losing us.
Typo. Okay. Well, if you make a good typo,
yes,
it becomes
you keep
a
the
verb.
Typo.
Yeah, you keep the typo. That's
all right,
the long
I'm going to let
short.
You finish your review, and then I'm going to be grumpy about them not including Kirby, the Kirby stories, as part of the legacy.
Yeah, that's going to be a whole thing because there's a whole lot of stuff with Legacy. Anyway, so if you're not familiar with Moon Girl, she is an Inhuman, and she has the power of, I think through portals or something, Devil Dinosaur came out, and then they sort of like linked where they can like flip. Like she, I think it's the full moon where she can become Devil Dinosaur, and then he becomes her.
Hmm. They switch minds.
Yeah, they switch minds. It's like Freaky Friday kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there is a primer in the back, which is not very helpful for it to be in the back, but it does like tell you a quick story about her and Devil Dinosaur. So you can jump into this issue if you want to. It focuses on Johnny Storm and the Thing of the Fantastic Four, who have gone to this little warehouse where all the Fantastic Four stuff has been taken out of the Baxter Building and just sort of dumped like trash. And there's this great line where Moon Girl, they think that she's going to want some of the gadgets and stuff because she's a child prodigy as well, and she's very scientifically minded, so they think, like, you know, nobody cares about this, maybe you'll care about it. And so she asks, like, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, I thought you'd like all these things. The Thing says that. And Johnny kind of sulks in the next panel, and he's like, the Baxter Building, it was our headquarters, and they said everything there was going to a warehouse in Queens. They just boxed it up like it was nothing. Nobody wants a Fantastic Four anymore.
Oh.
And the Thing's like, slow down, buddy. And like, they're having like a little moment. So if you want to have some of your fix, because there's going to be the Marvel 2-in-1 where they're kind of looking for the family again, mm-hmm. to try to reunite. I think this is a good thing. There's a reason why I personally got into this, and that's because there's a guy that I really like that's linked to the Fantastic Four that may be appearing in this miniseries. It's a three-part, and I think it's a good way where you can jump in, you can enjoy Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, but you don't have to get the commitment of going through all the other volumes. So it was really fun. I never said who it was by. So the writer is Brandon Montclair, and the artist is Natasha Bustos, and the colorist, who I'm adding to our Voltron of creators in the comic book industry, of people who are prolific in the industry, is Tamara Bonvillain, because she's she's kind of getting up there with Jordi Belair as a colorist.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Bonvillain?
Mm-hmm. Not Bond. Bond. Like bonbons. I remember those things?
I know. Remember Silliness?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, gosh. Where's Nicole? Where's the pod?
And I put all my fun into reading Moon Girl.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that you liked it because, you know, I don't remember if I reviewed the first issue or I just voiced to you guys that I really did not like the first two issues and dropped it right away because I was really concerned that white people were telling the story of a little black girl.
The artist is not a white person.
Not anymore.
Never was. This is sure? the artist that started it. Pretty sure.
Okay.
I remember that artist's name.
We're going to have to argue about that with the internet.
Well, anyway, I don't know how much I'm sold on like reading Moon Girl continuously, but I love this team up, and I think it's really fun. And I think it's always good to know where there's a jumping on point when something's been going for a while, too.
Herbie's in it?
Shh.
Oh, shoot.
I guess it's on
he's
the cover.
He's on the cover, though.
Yeah.
You can't shush me when he's on the cover.
Well, he might be in it. I mean, it's ruined now, but whatever.
Alrighty.
Anyway, no, cute things. Cute
right
things are
by
here.
You tonight. I need
it's
to be
$3.99. You only have to invest, you know, three times that to get a good, fun story arc. So do it.
Alrighty, cool. Thank you, Nicole. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Fantastic Three, Part 1. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us
this
week?
I've got a unique little independent self-published comic by a gentleman named Andrew Steers called Bomber Girl. This is kind of his introduction to, I think, a Bomber Girl series that he wishes to get off the ground. It's a pretty tightly focused little book. It's about, he didn't number the pages, but it's going to be, it's about 20 pages. So it's set in a dystopian future reality that's very much like our own, where the world is, where the American culture is dominated by an organization called GNN, the Global News Network, that is headed by a figure that looks, you know, shockingly like a certain illustrious 45th president. But GNN is a corporation that runs the whole world, and Bomber Girl is is a subversive and a saboteur. She flies a little kind of a rocket drone ship and does everything she can to disrupt the business of GNN. And the GNN logo looks like the CNN logo. It's fast paced. The colors are sharp. It moves very quickly. I enjoyed it. You know me, I'm always harping on, you know, have I read this story before? Is anything new to me? In the bigger picture, no, but I don't think that, dismisses the quality of the story. And I think there's a lot of potential here. I did enjoy reading it. It was a fast read. It was fun. It prices out at, I think, $5, and you can get it on Andrew's site at www.andrewsteers, and that's STEERS.com. Andrew is a very accomplished storyteller. However, this one kind of ends abruptly, and it doesn't really give you any indication of where we're going next, and it does end on an abrupt cliffhanger. But there's an ulterior motive why I want to share this book that Andrew produced, because coming in the winter, North Seattle College Continuing Education is going to make its third attempt at running a comic book illustration class. Third time is going to be the charm, people. And Andrew will be teaching that class, and I'm very excited about him having the opportunity to do this. He's a very gifted storyboard illustrator and cartoonist. The class starts on January 18th and runs till March 8th. That's for the tuition is $215. It's an evening class on Thursdays, and you know, as if you don't already know, my employer is North Seattle College Continuing Education, and I have been bucking for a comic book class since I started, and we've had a terrible, terrible time getting one off the ground because fate has conspired. But I have faith that this class is going to get off the ground. And you can register for the class at www.learnatnorth.org. And I will hopefully at some point be talking more about the work that Andrew does, and check out his book. It's also, Chris, it does have a barcode, so if you want to sell copies in the store, you know, we might want to talk to Andrew about that.
Barcode. So, yeah.
Bomber Girl. All right. Number one. Cool. By Andrew Steers.
Thank you, Cole. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, where you can also buy tickets to The Panel Jumper Live. We will talk more about that in the next episode. Believe me, we're going to talk a lot about that in the next episode.
I couldn't remember if it was this one or the
next one. Okay. All right. Great. As well as Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. You can subscribe to us via iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, our questions come to us from Mr. Chris Casso. Lay it on us, Chris.
Hello. This one is Heavy Metal Batman.
Yay. So what?
It is all about the current Dark Knight Metal Batman series. I was going to do a Thor one, but somebody hasn't seen it.
I am the only one at this table that hasn't seen Thor Ragnarok.
Guys, saw it for you.
That doesn't do me any good, baby. That doesn't do me any good because it's not in my brain. It's in your brain, and I can't get in your brain.
Number one.
The core push of the Dark Metal event focuses on the revelation of a dark multiverse that exists beneath the current DC multiverse. A specific map of the multiverse is used a few times and is actually the exact map created by Grant Morrison for what 2014 event series?
Multiversity.
Yes.
All right.
The main villain of this event is the demon Barbatos, the creation of Darkseid, also known as the Hyper Adapter. While Grant Morrison redefined and reutilized the monster in the series The Return of Bruce Wayne, it was actually an older creation that first appeared in Batman number 452 through 454 in a story called Dark Knight, Dark City. Who was the original writer of this story?
Mike Mignola did the covers.
He did, yep. The Riddler was in the story. Somebody I don't like.
Thinking so hard.
Somebody you don't like.
People. Yeah. He's a big Vertigo guy. He's a Vertigo guy.
Oh, must be Peter Milligan.
There you go. But he originally named the Bat Demon Barbathos. 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 Whatever.
Barbathon.
Barbathos.
Barbathon. Yes. Every day.
Batman is essentially prepared by a secret organization to become a portal for Barbatos, and he is secretly exposed to a variety of metals until he is finally exposed to what is dubbed as Batmanium.
Oh, God.
It's introduced into 2012 by writer Scott Snyder. What is the name of this cult?
The Cult of the Owls?
Yep, the Court of Owls.
The Court of Owls, wow. Yes. Do we get any heavy metal references in, you know, like music or anything?
They're going to be making a soundtrack.
Do they get their one-way ticket to midnight?
I might have missed those. Appearing at the end of the first issue of the event, the Sandman, also known as Daniel Hall, appears to give cryptic warnings. What is the legacy of Daniel Hall?
Daniel Hall is the daughter of...
Daniel.
Daniel is...
Daniel. Is a boy.
Yes.
Yes.
No, okay, but Daniel is the son of... Yo, I lost it.
Okay. His father is Hector Hall, right, who used to be the Silver Scarab and also Dr. Fate. Mm-hmm. And his mother was the Fury, who was the daughter of the Golden Age Wonder Woman.
Yeah, but what was her name?
Hippolyta.
No, the other gal. I should stop interrupting.
The Fury? Lyta was her short.
That's where I was, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was trying to... But... Trust me, I really was.
But Hector's father is Carter Hall.
Right.
Hawkman.
Right.
So, and that's Hawkman's going to be a big deal soon. We keep saying that. Maybe. Probably won't. Last question. The remaining heroes of the world seek shelter from the onslaught of evil Batman in a hidden magical pocket of space called the Oblivion Bar, a sanctuary for magical creatures. Originally owned by the hero Nightmaster, this bar was the headquarters of what magical super team? I was really hoping you'd get that because I forgot to write it down. And I'm having a blackout.
The bar? The Oblivion Bar?
The Oblivion Bar. What was the comic?
We just talked about it a couple weeks ago,
and I forgot to write it because I thought I knew it.
Move on to something else, and I will come back to it because my brain is...
Name the other heroes in the team.
Blue Devil, the Enchantress.
Yep.
That one blue guy, that one guy with a sword.
Blue Demon and Nightmaster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a very important character. Who's a monkey?
Detective Chimp.
Detective Chimp, yes.
And what's the name of the team, though?
I know, and I'm very sorry, guys.
I am so glad I am not the only one
to ever do this.
This is going to kill me. I got to go to my phone.
Forgot the answer.
Yeah, I liquidated my copies of it.
Yeah, they had their own.
I'm just having a Swiss cheese moment.
Bill Willingham wrote it.
Yeah, Bill Willingham did it.
Well, if you know the answer, friends, email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com, or we will look it up, and we will tell you next week on the Perfect Bound Podcast.
Tune in next week while these guys save face.
Thank you for listening.